Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Hey, Church Planner, this is Pete Mitchell.
You know, when you do that opening, there's so much more energy in it than when you do our closing. You're like, hey, this is Pete Mitchell. And at the end, you're like, remember, if you want to, you know, reach the ones no one's reaching. You sound sad at the end, excited to get it going, but then sad at the end.
I had so many things go through my head right there that I cannot say on the podcast. Just know they would have been great.
Yes.
And I would have been just as canceled as Jimmy Kimmel. It would have been that quick.
Yeah, but he came back. You could only get yourself.
He only partially came back. There's still 25% of the ABC stations that didn't bring him back.
Oh, okay. I didn't know all this.
Yeah, right. No, apparently two of the, entertainment groups that they own between the two of them, 25% of the ABC stations, they're not bringing him back.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, man, it seems like everything that you talk about now is fraught with controversy. You can't have a conversation with people without, you know, Americans being Americans. And ironically, not having original thoughts or opinions, but falling neatly into two categories. It's like it's engineered, Pete.
You know what's crazy to me? And you can probably speak to this much more than I can. I cannot believe, I'm like dumbfounded at the lack of free speech in the UK.
Oh, dude, it's so bad.
I'm like, how is this like possible?
Yeah, your tweets, your Facebook comments get you jailed.
Yeah, or even liking a post can get you in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, how is this real? You know, like, and I don't know if that's just because we're spoiled as Americans having free speech. But to me, free speech, freedom of religion, those are like basic human rights.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I'm not a Buddhist. I don't agree with the Buddhist religion, but I agree you have the right.
Yeah.
To be a Buddhist, God says you got the right to reject me. If that's what you want to do, that's your
America. America gave you the right to be a bigot if you want to be, which I hope no one hears any advocation for being a bigot, but it did protect everyone else at the same time from bigots. So in other words, a bigot, you can be a bigot, but you can't use your power as a bigot. That, and way back in the beginning, I mean, you know, the founding fathers, this was in the very beginning of the founding documents. Like I read a book about John Adams, right? Where he hated slavery from the beginning. You know, Jefferson also knew, even though he owned slaves, he knew this is inconsistent with what we're seeing, with all this talk of freedom. So you go back to the founding fathers and it was all there and they're like, but we got to stand against the British. We can't fight this battle now. We need the Southern colonies and, or the Southern states. And so they chose to, band together and not fight that battle, but it was all there. I mean, it was all there when they found it. It was an ideal. And it was meant to protect people. So it's interesting that when I lived in Britain, I felt within the first few months of living there, the lack of the First Amendment. It was palpable. Really? Yeah, you could feel it. You have to live in a country where you have to be careful what you say to feel how good we had it in this country. Like, honestly.
Yeah. See, that's crazy. Cause I know it's getting that way in Canada as well. And I'm like, it just, it's such an unfathomable thought to me.
Yeah.
Probably because there's so many people who I disagree with, right? I'm like,
you would think in a civilized society, you know, we would be able to have dialogue. We'd be able to talk radically different opinions and come to the table and have a good, healthy debate. Yeah, I mean, that's how it should be. You know, I mean, the church, man, the church has, you know, way back, man, Council of Nicaea debated all kinds of stuff. You know, the Westminster Divines getting together in the 1600s and debating all that stuff, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting to me because of the how much we, I mean, social media has turned it from a debate. And I think it's not even a debate anymore, right?
It's an angry mob.
It is. It's the angry mob. And
yeah.
And when you find your tribe that agrees with you, you know, you go all in with your tribe. Like, I still remember, you know, because I've said this before, I'm a very conservative person, right? Like, I am. I'm conservative in almost every way. But yet I'd have never been like a Trump fan, just wasn't, right? And I remember I said like a couple of different things on social media that were like anti-Trump. And like all my conservative friends were like, how dare you? How dare you not like Trump? How do you not, you know, pull the party? I'm like, dude, the guy's a jerk. Like, he's just flat out, he's a jerk. He talks to people the way I would not want to talk about people, like even people I don't like.
Yeah.
And, but it's just like, it's amazing. Like, wait, I have to buy into Trump if I'm a conservative. I'm like, no, like there's some things that Trump's done that I like. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of things that he's done that I like. There's a lot of things that he's done that I do not like, but the thing that probably bothers me the most is I don't like the way he treats people. I don't like the way he talks to people. He's literally the anti-Charlie Kirk, right? Like, Charlie Kirk would engage in a dialogue with people that he disagreed with.
He said that. Did you hear that in the funeral? I didn't watch the funeral, but I saw one clip. And it what was, did he say? Actually, I saw two clips. He said, Charlie Kirk was very kind to his enemies and he loved them. And he said, that's where I disagreed with Charlie. I hate my enemies. I hate them so much. Yeah, it busted me up because my wife sent it, and I said, oh, that is classic Trump right there. And I think he was being funny, and I actually think he was being honest. I think
that's an honest statement from him for sure.
Yeah, I think the light, like, this is what was interesting to me, the light of who Charlie Kirk was. In his Christianity, and I know there's like Christians, you know, polarizing over this, but for a man who will reach across the aisle after debating you, I don't care who you are or what your background is, and value you as a human being, as someone made in God's image, and shake your hand and be kind to you and say, I wish you the best. That is Christ-like. And Trump was definitely responding to the light. And same with Elon. Like, Elon came out and they did an interview. And again, you and I are not far apart where, you know, I'm not a Trump supporter. I also don't think he's the devil everyone makes him out to be, or Hitler either. I think people on both sides are full of crap when it comes to their loyalty or hatred for the other leader. Funny enough, a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to the helicopter pilot. I don't know. You don't call it Air Force One, but whatever the helicopter is.
Marine One.
It was Marine One. He was the pilot, you know, because I live in a military town. So we went out, daddy-daughter dance. So we all went out afterwards, you know, and took our kids to Dave and Buster's. And we sat around a table while the kids played and what have you. And he didn't want to mention, he's a really cool guy, but he's like, yeah, I was a pilot for Marine One, both under Biden and Trump. And, you know, Trump's first term. So 8 years, that's what he did. And it was just really interesting. Whenever you talk to military people, generally speaking, my brother's the same way. He doesn't fall in a party line. That was his commander in chief. And what he tends to do, is he will say, like, oh, no, he was good in this way. He wasn't great in this way, but he was good in this way. Because the military has a very different, like, there's not any presidents I know that were anti-military. Obama was known for being extremely good to the military, and my brother said that. Trump is, like, all presidents are good to the military, and the military generally appreciates the presidents. They may not have voted for him, but it is their commander-in-chief, and so that's a really interesting dynamic that I've noticed. But like with Elon, what I was saying is, you know, because now Elon's either you love him or hate him, and I just think to myself, that's such a weird thing. Like, Jesus does not teach us to look at people that way. Jesus taught us to look at everybody with value, including Pharisees, tax collectors, prostitutes, Roman soldiers. Like, it didn't matter. Centurions. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. You don't put them in a category of good or evil. The Bible starts off, says we're all evil. There is, to quote Mike Chong Perkinson, no us and them biblically. There is just as not. If you find yourself as a Christian getting into an us and them mentality, you have been shanghaied. You've been suckered as a Christian. You do not have the biblical worldview of Christianity. If you put someone in the opposite political party as your enemy, you have ceased to be a missionary. I don't care how you put it, but if that's what you're leading out with, you are no longer going to all nations.
Well, I remember Refuge Long Beach. We're in Long Beach, which is LA County. In fact, for those that don't know California, it's joked that the difference between LA County and Orange County, it's called the Orange Curtain.
Yeah.
And it literally is a completely different world. Like,
it starts and ends. I mean, you can't really count the sliver of Seal Beach, but Huntington Beach is as right as you can get. And it's up against Long Beach, which is LA, and as LA as you can get.
Right.
So you've got this, they're right, these two cities, right? And you literally just cross over a road, and you go from one to the other, and you are now in. You go from MAGA country into, left country. And yeah, go on, finish.
No, sure. So my point in bringing that up is, like, we knew when we did the church plant in Long Beach, we could not talk about politics because everyone was coming from Orange County, right? All the church plant people were, I mean, I don't know how they all were, but I would bet that a bunch of them were very conservative in nature, just one, having known them, and two, where they're coming from. And it's like, you're not going to reach people in Long Beach if you're, like, talking like a conservative. Like, you can't. So we didn't. Like, that's not what we were there to do. We're not there to convert you to Republicanism. We're there. I mean, besides that, I wasn't even a Republican, right? I was an independent, but. You know, we're not there for that. We're there to share the gospel. So let's not worry about that stuff. Let's put that stuff on hold. Let's focus on Jesus and we'll go from there.
Yeah.
We had to do that. We had to do it.
We had to. It's part of being a missionary. And the reason we had to do it is it was so difficult for people to get out of that. You know, they had basically for years crammed themselves into one camp or the other. And by the way, we had people in both camps, in both extremes, if you remember.
Oh.
All of the students were far left. And we had an art teacher there in Long Beach at the university. She was far left. And we just had to have a powwow because then we had all these far right people. And we're like, look, you guys, we're not going to reach anybody. If that's what you're leading out with, somewhere in the middle of what you guys are, some of what you guys are saying is Jesus, and some of what you guys are saying is Jesus. None of you have all of what Jesus is saying here. And so and I know for people, like, listening to the podcast, they're triggered by that, you know, especially with the current polarization that's happened. Like, you know, we spoke of, like, Charlie Kirk's death, completely wrong. And in no way should we minimize that. And in no way, like I said last week, should we look and say, Well, what was he saying? I still hold that as like asking what a girl's wearing when she's been sexually assaulted. And you know, it's funny, like all the things I've been watching social media, and I so bad want to draft a post, Pete, that says, you know, there was this guy, he spoke out, you know, he entered public debates with his opponents. He said things that were politically, you know, inflammatory. At times people call him a racist, because he seemed like he really had only had a heart for one people group. And
he hung out with tax collectors and
yeah,
drunkards.
Yeah. And at the end, I was going to say, and they killed him for it. And it, you know, and of course, you know where this is going. It's Jesus. You know, he told a Phoenician woman, hey, it's not right to give, you know, food for the children to the dogs. Well, okay, now you get to label him a racist. You can just take that out. You know, hey, he said inflammatory things. What about the Tower of Siloam? Repent, or you're all likewise perish. Oh, you know, like you could get canceled for that. Like, there's nothing like breaking up the temple, you know, disturbing the peace. I mean, I could literally paint you a picture of Jesus that I don't care what you say about Charlie Kirk. Far worse. I mean, Jesus, I can pick out quotes and I can show you things Jesus did that Charlie Kirk never did. And so all this criticizing, I'm like, dude, Christians, read your freaking Bible. If you're disturbed by Charlie Kirk because of this, that, and that, you need to read your stinking Bible, because Jesus was a lot more disturbing than Charlie Kirk, and we worship him. And here's the thing with Charlie Kirk. Charlie blended the politics and religion. He was primarily, and this is where he was primarily a political speaker, not a Christian speaker. So a lot of the arguments I'm seeing are invalid, but that also goes back to what we said last week about, hey, we don't have to look at Charlie as a martyr either, but does it blur the lines? Probably, because the dude was so freaking bold about his faith.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, we say he's not a preacher. That dude was more bold than most preachers in sharing the faith publicly. Like, I actually think he was more like John the Baptist. He was like a voice in the wilderness. He reminded me, because I didn't know him that much, but when I went back and looked, I'm like, dude, he was a lot like this lone voice out in the wilderness.
You know, one of the, and I know today's episode's not about Charlie Kirk.
And by the way, I don't mean like for Republicanism. I'm separating the two right now. The stuff he said about Jesus and the gospel was good stuff. I understand not everybody agrees with his politics. I'm not, but he did blend them, because he would say, well, this is the foundation of my belief. But I can argue this apart from that. But yeah, I mean, it creates problems for people for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just, one of the big takeaways that I had, because, you know, other than seeing Charlie Kirk reels on Instagram and whatnot, I never followed him. Other than that, I'm like, a lot of the stuff he said, I agreed with. A lot of the things that, like I said before, I didn't like how closely he tied himself to Trump and the Republicans, only because he was so vocal about his faith. I'm like, dude, Trump's going to like make that look bad, because this is how Trump is. But the thing that, like, the big takeaway, like, this is just a weird takeaway, but it's what I took away from the things that kept popping up about Charlie Kirk. And it actually has nothing to do with most everything. This is just me with my business mind as I'm looking at this. He kept asking key people to mentor him. Like that Frank Turek guy, who's an apologist, who spoke at the funeral. And I don't know if you saw this clip, but it was one of the most powerful clips, because the way he says it is, he's just like, look, Charlie's in heaven today, not because he was a good guy, not because he was a good father, not because he was a good husband, not because of all the millions of lives that he helped change and turn around. He's in heaven today because his Savior died for him. Like, he just leveled the gospel at people. He asked Victor to mentor him. And in fact, when Victor tells the story, he goes, yeah, you know, we're on Charlie's plane, and Charlie comes over to him and says, hey, can I sit next to you? And Victor's like, it's your plane, Charlie. You can sit wherever you want. He's like, okay, good. He goes, hey, I want you to mentor me. And I was like, wow.
In the ways of Kung Fu.
Well, and then Victor, he goes into, well, what does that mean to you? Because I'm not going to train you to be a weak man. I'm going to mentor you to be a strong man, you know, to take a stand on things. But the thing that just really captured my attention is I kept hearing those stories of he kept asking people to mentor him. And I love that because as I look at that, I'm like, okay, so like he sees a deficiency in himself. And instead of like, oh, I'm going to just overcome it myself. I'm going to read some books. I'm going to watch some YouTube videos. It's like, no, dude, let me go get a mentor who can help me get better at this. And because those are the two that I heard about, Frank and Victor. But I'm like, you know, that was like what he did. Like you could just tell, like he went up to key people in different areas of his life. Hey, can you mentor me? And, you know, it started when he was 18. I think he asked Tucker Carlson to mentor him as an 18-year-old. And I mean, like, I just love that idea of, look, I'm just going to like, who can help me? Who can help me? Like mentor me and then being willing to be mentored. Because a lot of people, you know, will come to you and be like, hey, mentor me, but then they won't do anything. Like I had this happen a lot when I was doing the Bible training for pastors, right? And it's like, okay, you're not doing anything I'm telling you to do. Like, what? Why do you think you're where you are? Like, I told you what to do. You asked me what to do. I told you, and you're not doing it.
It's amazing to me how much, and church planning was like this too. I mean, whenever I write stuff on church planning, I always had this section on like grit, you know, like just getting your hands dirty and doing stuff you don't want to do. Now I have Brooks, you know, who does all that stuff for me, but sorry, Brooks, please don't mute and delete me. But the reality is, I mean, when you're planting a church, man, there's all that crap you got to do, like just the nasty stuff. And when you talk about mentoring, I don't think there's hardly anyone out there that if you came to them and said, hey, would you disciple and mentor me within reason that they would say no. This is one of the things
in ministry. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm a business guru, they'd be like, join my program or, right. You know, pay me high dollars for coaching. But the reality is if someone comes to you and just says, hey, I just want to be mentored, like I offer coaching. I mean, you know, you guys can go to New Breed and check out my coaching, you know, search for coaching on there. I think it's newbreedtraining.com/coaching and I'll coach you. And it takes like from my time. So I do charge you for it. But there is a list. I have 12 people at a time that I mentor in the faith. They change. I add new ones. I set other ones free. Just did a wedding with a guy where, I didn't do the wedding. I went to the wedding of one of the guys I started discipling during COVID while I was writing Plantology. And he just got married. He was single. He met a girl at the skate park. His name's Skater Chris, the most punk rock dude I've ever met. He liked this like roller derby chick that went to this church. And he came and he and I hit it off. First day we started talking about Warhammer. And I was like, dude, you know, I'm on this book project and I so want to get into Warhammer. And I haven't done that in like 20 something years. And he's like, me too. And so we started talking, build a friendship. And I started discipling him. And dude came to faith. And he's married now. You know, I walked him through all that. How am I going to find a wife? And, you know, yada, yada. And brother, it's like, but that whole mentorship thing, you know, it is part of discipleship. I think disciple making and mentorship go hand in hand. And this could be today's topic. It's not far off from what today's topic was going to be. It was going to be about disciple making. But I think you naturally segued into what we should talk about. What does disciple making look like?
Oh, I thought when you said natural segue, I thought we're going straight into Simplify Church.
Oh yeah. Hey, with all that mentoring that Charlie Kirk did, how did he keep his books? Too far?
No, not for me.
All right. That would be a terrible segue by the way, but I did not do that. Maybe I save something like that for the end. But yeah, should we do it?
Yeah, going to the topic. Yeah. All right. Are we doing the intro? Yeah. Well, Scott, yeah. It's time for this week's topic.
Let's get down to the nitty gritty.
Some people think Paul just worked with his hands, and he did, but he also raised funds. Don't believe me? Check out Philippians 4, 1 Corinthians 10, and Romans 15. In fact, when the kingdom of God catapulted forward, there was usually a kingdom-minded businessman or woman behind it, like Priscilla and Aquila. If you're going to raise funds, though, do it well. Our partners, Reliant, can help you put rocket fuel in your fundraising tank. I wish I'd had this when I was church planning, but Reliant can partner with you to get you the training and coaching you need to raise that support, as well as provide you with employment services you may need, like payroll, health benefits, and more. To learn more, check out Reliant.org/CPP. All right, so we are going to talk about mentorship. So mentorship, it's really interesting that Charlie did that. I would say that I was doing that at a young age. I always wanted a dad. And I think the Bible really kind of gets into that. Like when you're a leader, you're like a father. Like Paul used those kind of terms, my true son in the faith. Mentoring is like being a dad. And there's some cases in which that might be, you know, like kind of weird. We're like, oh, I think I'm more like an older brother to you because maybe there's 10 years between us, not even old enough to be your dad. But there's that sense of developing people, fathering them, giving them guidance, counsel. And when you're doing that, there has to be a mutual acknowledgement. So the fact that Charlie asked people, can you mentor me? That has to be done. And the mentor has to agree. And if the mentor approaches a young man and says, hey, I would like to take you under my wing and pour into you. I've done that. I've done that with a number of people over the years. I've done that in the last couple years. I have a list, like I said, 12 people that it's, I learned it from Todd Wilson. It's called my wallet card. I never kept 12 before. I keep 12 now. And I disciple them in different ways. Certain people, it's phone calls. Certain people, it's Zoom calls. Certain people, it's a little more sporadic over text and phone conversation. Other people, I meet them face-to-face in town here. So it varies, but the most important thing about a mentorship is it has to be asked for. Otherwise, you're speaking into someone's life and giving unbidden, unsolicited advice, and that's resented. So, like, for example, Jesus extended the invitation to the 12 at the beginning of the second year. This is getting into discipleology a little bit. But he said,
ka-ching.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I finished the manuscript and turned it in.
Monday. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Because they're going to come back and go, oh, we need some more revisions. And you go, I'm busy, guys, for the next 2 weeks. I got to rewrite chapter 7.
That's so true. But they won't let me make any more revisions. I've rewritten this book 9 times. I don't just edit a word here and there. Brooks can testify to this since he's listening. I rewrite this freaking thing. I'm on the 9th rewrite, or I was. It's done now.
It's not done.
It is. I'm going to Disneyland. Don't mock me.
It's never done.
Disneyland.
I still love how you, my mentor, Peyton Jones, said to me, you're the unhappiest man at the happiest place on earth.
Yes. I don't know that I mentored you, though. I think no, it's the other way. I think you corrupted me.
You never offered when I asked. You said, no.
No, sucker, we're friends. I can't mentor you if you're my friend.
He said, cash on the barrel head, then I'll mentor you.
Yeah, exactly. I think really, to be honest, what happened was, because there's people you just need as friends, right? Just need that person to send that text to that you can't send anyone else, right? When you enter into a mentorship relationship, there's a couple, I want to define some terms here because there's mentorship, there's coaching, and there's training. Mentorship I'm using it a little bit differently on this podcast than I would normally use it. Mentorship for me is more like in a skill. Like you can come to me and say, I want to grow Peyton as a develop as a writer. Can you mentor me? I'm mentoring you in a skill. Pete, I want to come to you. I need to market. I need to get better at sales. Can you help me? Or I want to make five figures. Can you help me? And you're like, yeah, I could totally, or sorry, six figures. Yeah, I can help you.
I need to make some tall three figures. I want to be in the hundreds of dollars.
For some people, four figures in bad, three figures in bad, right?
If we're talking an hour, or are we talking what time frame?
No, I mean, if someone comes, like, that was funny that I said, you know, five figures. But everybody makes five figures. If you're not making five figures in a year, you're in big trouble. But no,
in someone, the United States, you're in trouble.
Yeah. So I want to make six figures. You know, but it's a skill and it's a compartmentalized thing. Discipleship, though, when you're discipling someone, that's your entire life. That's not just in a skill. It's not like there's a light switch. Like my coaching is like mentoring, right? It's not quite discipling. Because when you're discipling somebody, it's, hey, I'm inviting you into my life. And we're not just talking about this thing you want to grow in. And then I would say coaching is something that you do, and it can be done in groups, or it can be, it's a little bit of the in-between mentoring and that personal aspect, because coaching is going to involve everything, not just a skill, but the emotions, you know, this and that, like everything under the sun. Well, how is this affecting your relationship with your wife? Like coaching goes broader. And then, training is specifically, it is to get you to action. So like, that's the difference. Like you were saying, like mentorship, mentorship is where you tell them what they should do. Training is where you tell them how they should do it, right? And sometimes people, they blend it. So with training, what we do is we do, in New Breed, we have these cohorts. And what I watched with multiple organizations and denominations was it always fell apart when they attempted to do the coaching part. They could run their little training and people would come to a Zoom call. But getting someone to like stop their world and spend an hour coaching someone else, that always fell down. Right. So New Breed, we did 90-minute cohorts and your group coaching is in there. So it's highly interactive. So we'll tell people our training, you know, some people will be like, oh, I see what you're doing. It's really coaching. We're like, no, it's training and coaching combined. So our cohorts are a little bit different. But if you want mentoring, that's more like, you know, what we would call coaching call. It's a mentoring call, really. Right. I ask people, what do you want to get? If they open it up to coaching, well, I don't just want writing, you know, skills in writing. I don't want you to mentor me in that. I want to just know how to, like they might say, I want to know how to get to the finish line well, or I just want to, I'm doing this and I need coaching all of it, like mentally, spiritually, socially, like I need you to cover all my bases so I can just get through the safe. That would widen it to coaching. So, but disciple making involves mentoring. So because of that, you have to ask and give permission. So when Jesus says, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men, he established the relationship. He established, you're going to have to get close to me to do this. You got to follow me. I am in the position where I will make you into something. I will make you something you're not, fishers of men. There was a skill there, but there was also a 24/7 commitment. And in the Jewish faith, that's called a Talmud, which comes from the word to learn. That's where we get disciple from. If you did it in a group, like group disciple making, which it always was group, the one-on-one was a breakaway from the group, but the group in Hebrew would be called a Talmudim. And a Talmudim was your little band where transformation would happen within community. And you would learn, it would be peer-to-peer learning, all that kind of stuff. But that idea of going to people and asking them to disciple you, I don't know that I've ever said no to that. When somebody that I am in contact with says, hey, I will get close to you, I will follow you, and I will serve you. Is that, that's what happens. Like, there are people on New Breed staff right now, that came and got alongside me and said, I want to learn from you, and would you pour into me? And, you know, cause I remember like Bob Logan, he coached me for a year. I had to pay him a lot of money. Bob Logan, by the way, for those of you youngsters out there, Bob Logan was me back in the day. Like if you want to learn about church planning, you went to Bob Logan. He had this thing called the Bob Logan Toolkit, and Pete and I used to see, that's why I shut my phone off. So Bob Logan had this thing called the Church Planner Toolkit, and so many people Pete and I interviewed, it was all about, like, I would say, oh, who taught you? And they'd say, Bob Logan. And they would join this program and what have you. So when I came to Bob Logan, he goes, hey, what do you want to get out of this call? I said, I want to be the next Bob Logan. And he laughed. And I said, no, you don't understand. Everyone that I interview says you train them. And I want to train people like you did. You trained two whole generations of church planners. And he wasn't doing that anymore. So I said, look, you're one of my heroes. I want to. So that was just coaching. And we'd meet for an hour every month. And he did start coach.net as well. He was kind of like, that dude was so apostolic, started so many things. But I guess what I'm saying is, at the end of the day, there always has to be an agreement. And if you went to people and said, hey, will you train me? Will you take me under your wing? That was how I ended up going to Sandfields. The guy who was Lloyd Jones's protege, I heard him speak. I wrote him a letter. He wrote me back. And I asked him on the return, hey, I'm 22 years old. I'm the head of a mega church because the guy in front of me had a moral failure. I have no clue what I'm doing. Can I write to you? And this is back, you know, he wasn't on email. So he was like, yeah. So we wrote letters back and forth in like the early 90s. I think it was like 92. And come by 99, he was like, why don't you come be the evangelist at Sandfields? That's how I got there. So that, you know, that asking someone to mentor you, I mean, it's one step away from Lloyd Jones, you know, that, and he didn't say no. I think he was honored, like, oh, this young guy looks up to me. You know, he was like in his 60s at that point. I think he was around 65, which isn't even old to me now. But yeah, sorry, I'm talking a lot, Pete. This is a subject I love.
It's funny because, you know, one of the things that I think, I think people need to think about this before they start just going out there and asking people to mentor them.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of things. One, are you going to do what they tell you? Like, it's got to be more than just, oh, look, I got all these guys and they're mentoring me, and oh, they give me some good nuggets over here, and you picking and choosing. It's like, look, no, if you're asking someone to mentor you, you're asking them to take their time, their energy, their brain power and pour into you. And how disrespectful is it if you don't do what they tell you to do? So don't do it unless you're like, no, I'm going to do this. Right. And the other thing is, you got to be thinking, like, what can I do for them? Because you are taking their time, their energy, their brain power, their money. You're picking them of all those things. And that's why, like, I'm sure that Charlie Kirk paid those guys, right? He asked them to mentor him, but I'm sure he paid them because, one, they're flying around with him. Like, yeah. No one's taking time out of their day and flying around with someone else unless they can meet their own bills, because right. You're paying them.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing too, because I think they're, like, I still remember this one guy. Oh my gosh, dude, it's so crazy to me. Like, when I was doing the Bible pastor training, And he comes to me and he's like, yeah, you know, I keep praying about what I'm going to do. And I keep thinking, oh, I gotta reach out to Pete, and, you know, but I don't have the money to come through this. I'm like, oh, it's probably not the right time for you then. And he goes, oh, I wasn't expecting that as an answer. I'm like, well, what were you expecting? You're expecting me to give up my time, money, and energy to someone who, first of all, I happen to know the guy. And I'm like, I know you're not going to actually do what I tell you to do. Right. But then it's like, you know, what do you think? Like, and I'm not saying that you always got to like pay with cash. That's not what my point is. Like, there has to be a relationship here where it makes sense to, like, I'm not just mentoring for the sake of mentoring. Now, I would almost say in ministry, there's a time and a place when you do just mentor for the sake of mentoring. But I could see like where people are like, you know, Charlie Kirk used this to advance his career, right? Like, he was making money doing Turning Point. I think it's a nonprofit, but I also heard, you know, that he was worth like $12 million when he died. I don't know if that's true or not, but I know he had books and he made money off of his books because he did develop a name for himself. And that means people are going to buy his stuff and he is going to make money. Like, it's just the way it works. Right. So, but I don't know where I'm going with that. I'm thinking through it. Cause I don't want people to just start asking people to mentor them, but it, like, you're not really respecting what the other person is doing. And it's probably because I've seen it too much when people pay, right? Like, I had people pay me.
Yeah.
And still wouldn't do what I told them to do.
Well, like, this is kind of part of the thing. You don't have to say yes. So, for example, like Bob Logan, he was very selective about who he'd coach. He only had so many slots. And he would say, I can't remember, he had like a phrase that he would use, and it was that he would coach people that would catalyze the kingdom forward, and that was it. Like, people, he would only pour into people that he knew had the potential to pour into, like, a lot of other people. That was it. That's how he did it. So anyone he was going to personally coach, it had to have an exponential kingdom impact.
Interesting.
And it was something like that. Todd Wilson, who, you know, a few years ago, I would have said he was the kingmaker. You know of Brian Sanders because of Todd Wilson. So many people that you know of that made it big, Hugh Halter, others, you know about him because of Todd. He was like the kingmaker in the multiplication sphere. If he promoted you, you got known. And of course, you know, for us, Pete, right? We just started our own podcast and, you know, made our own little platform out there, you know.
We made our own kings.
And you know what? I'm him. But here's the thing, right? The reality is that Todd, the same thing. He has a ditty that he gives where it says, you know, something to 10, 30, 100-fold impact. Like, he's got this little mantra. So you find people like that who pour into others. They have a criterion, and it there has to be, it's not always money. It has to be that the kingdom impact is worth that hour that I pour in or whatever it is. And so, yes, it has to be worth it. And don't be offended if you're like, oh, you know, because what Pete's saying, I think it's really important, are you going to waste this? I mean, yeah. Judas wasted it.
Yeah. Right?
Are you going to waste this? You know, Paul writes, Demas, who loved the world, has forsaken us. He wasted it. There are people that you pour into and they waste it. And so you start learning as a leader. Like I know leaders who, when you show up late to a meeting, and it's a group, I knew a guy here, I actually trained him. But when he started doing stuff, if you were like 3 minutes late and there were eight people in the group, he would say, you just robbed this group of 24 minutes, including yourself. Every person here lost those 3 minutes with you not here. So that was 24 minutes of loss. You think 3 minutes late is okay? but you cost the group collectively 24 minutes. And Nick, he would.
Can you say that again? Except this time, internalize it.
No, I'm not going to say that. But you know, I'm not late anymore. Like you were one of the people. It's like, dude, you don't understand. I'm a marketer. My time is money. And I was totally going on.
I never said
time.
My time is money. That was what you thought. Yeah. That was the conversation in your head. I've never said that to you.
I think you did.
But my time is money.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you said that.
I never
that.
Did, dude. I know I never did.
Yeah, but you made it very clear. Hey, listen, you know, like this is important. Like making me wait 2-3 minutes, not okay. And that was really good. Like that was good for me, brother. And I think about that. There are still times I show up late to things. No doubt. But
you're not like you used to be.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. And
it's probably because you got so busy. You're like, I have to run my schedule tight or I'm never going to get the stuff done that I need.
And I started learning. Like I started learning that was the norm in the business world. Like you show up late to something, it's so disrespectful. And like if a mentor is going to take their time out and mentor you, you don't dare show up late. And I remember Mac Lake saying something really cool. He said, if there's someone I respect out there and want them as a mentor, and if they ever mention a book that I should read, he's like, I 100% read that book. I have to read that book. He said, I get a hold of it. He goes, if you respect someone and they're telling you that a book shaped them or they're recommending it, you don't even argue. Just purchase it and you freaking read it. That's not how Mac said it, because Mac, I didn't realize, by the way, I was like, oh, look at that. Brandy Lake leading the worship over at that funeral in Arizona. So I texted Mac and I'm like, dude, your boy, he's like leading worship in front of the nation right now. And Mac was like, yeah, I'm so proud, you know, like, because I remember like we were working together when he's like, hey, my son's going to play tonight at this concert and it could be a big break for him. Could we just stop and pray? I remember like being there when all that was happening. So I don't follow worship music. So I was impressed because I'm like, hey, I've never met Brandon, but I know his dad extremely well. So that was kind of neat.
Yeah, no, that is cool.
But
I didn't realize he did that.
But yeah, I think grabbing mentors. I always have mentors. My mentor right now, I've had him on this podcast, is a guy named Pete Mitchell. No, I'm teasing. He's a guy named Mike Chong Perkinson.
I knew that's where you were going.
Oh, I'm telling you, the dude is like, we were on a meeting last night because he's a Free Methodist, but he's, you know, the Free Methodists, I got to tell you, this tribe I'm in, they're amazing. They're just amazing. It is the Peyton Jones shaped hole. Like I just fit right in. It's exactly like the tribe that I always needed. Not the tribe I deserved, but the tribe Peyton needs. But what happened was last night he got a group of us together in this geographic area. He's like Pacific Coast, and he just poured into us. At first, we talked for 20 minutes and he poured into us for about 20 minutes and we discussed it for 20 minutes. And it's mind blowing, this dude. So his area of study that he was working on his doctorate in was patristics. So like the early church fathers. And then,
I was about ready to say Gesundheit.
And then his master's was in rabbinics. So rabbinical learning and training. So like this dude, like, you could not have a guy who is more tailored to what I need to be learning. And he ran this thing called Praxis for like the last 20 years. He's kind of backed away from a little bit, but it was like Newbery training. But like back when everyone was going to like Forge and gathering around Alan Hirsch, there was another tribe of people and it was never as big. But it was called Praxis, and it was him and Dr. Tom Johnston, who's also been on the show, and they two ran it together. And I'm like, man, where were you guys? If I had found you guys all those years ago, like it was my jam, like absolutely my jam. And so I'm so blessed to have him as a mentor. We get together every Friday morning. We talk. You become friends. Like, you're going to be friends. But he is my sensei. So after the meeting, I'm like, hey, excellent, my sensei. That was amazing, you know, blah, blah, blah. Just text him. And he starts texting me back all this Miyagi stuff. And then pretty soon we're into Karate Kid. And I'm like, this is why we're friends.
Have you, sent him the soundbite? That's all I want to know.
No, send it to me.
I got to find it. Oh, my gosh, dude. You guys have no idea. Okay, we've talked about this before, but I'm telling you, one of the funniest things ever, back when we had a soundboard on the podcast, which never seems to last very long, Peyton, like, sends me this clip, and it's the original.
It was for your birthday, right? Wasn't it for your birthday that I sent?
No idea, man.
I sent you a bunch of, like, Miyagi things, and that was one of them where I had done, like, modified ditties for the podcast.
What's he talking? He's like, you know, walk on right side road, safe. Walk on left side road, safe. Walk in middle, just like grape.
He goes, then, squish, just like grape.
And then you go, church planter. Like, you, like, dubbed in your voice and said church planter like two or three times.
Yeah, there was the one, I think that was the one where it goes karate do or karate do not. Something like that. And I was like, church planter do. Or, and it's me, like, obviously a really bad dub, church planter do, you know, or church planter, or it goes, or church planter do not.
It was hilarious, man. I literally was like, you texted it to me and I'm dying.
You were crying. Yeah.
Do it. It just, oh my God. I'm like, this has to go on the podcast. This is the best one ever.
It was just the worst dub ever, but it came from my heart. You know, and I remember I was laughing my butt off. I did a bunch of them. I'll see if I can find them. They're around here somewhere in a WAV file. But I made a bunch of them and I sent them for your birthday. I'm like, happy birthday. And I just made all these hilarious sound bites for you.
Yeah.
But it would be the equivalent of a mixtape, Pete.
Oh.
Sorry, I went there. You did. I made it weird.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
So, yeah, so everybody needs a mentor. You never outgrow the need for a mentor. There's always somebody out there who can disciple you and should, you know, like, you guys out there should be discipling people. If you're not discipling people and you're here listening to Church Planner podcast, guess what? You're going to end up in the same problem Peyton Jones had, which is he discipled Jimbo Balaam. And I did this in two church hubs, two. And didn't really learn until the second time around when I was trying to leave. And that was, I did not multiply myself enough. So I was not giving the attention to disciple making that Jesus hardwired into the 12. And they never had a bottleneck in Jerusalem. All those guys left because they just kept raising up disciples who raised up disciples. And that's one of the reasons I'm writing Discipology. Cha-ching! Which, by the way, if you want to go get a copy of it, it is, and I'll hold you back, it is, oh gosh, excuse me, it is on Amazon right now, but
pre-order?
You can get pre-order, but we're going to do a special campaign. So if you're like, I don't care about that, you just want to secure your place, because I will tell you, it is going to sell out. The book is going to sell out maybe even before it launches. We'll have it at exponential, but with our partnership with Through the Word, if less than 1% of that audience buys a book, it's already in its second printing. And I'm pretty sure that's going to happen. So you can go get the pre-order now, but just know we are going to have special promotions that if you buy it before launch date or leave a review. So you might want to wait for that, but I did want to let you guys know that's there. And also Journey, I don't know that I've even advertised this, Pete, Journey to Disciple Making, which is the journal, a Discipology journal. It's like, it's the same, it's for the disciple maker. The Discipology book is for a catalyst. Let's say you're a youth pastor. You would give those journals to all your kids in your youth group and say, hey, we're going to make disciples. And that's for you to track your own journey. But you as a leader would have Discipology. Be too much to give a 15-year-old kid. They'd be like, what? Frying my brain. But it's for you as the disciple making catalyst. But yeah, so you can go on Amazon and get them now and pre-order both of them.
When does it actually come out?
Cha-ching. March 17th, St. Patty's Day. I didn't even work that out. You know, Plantology came out on 420.
Do you remember when Hugh Halter did that little book and I don't know if it was disciple making or church planning or what, or team leadership or what it was, but he was like, he sold it in packs of five. It's a little tiny book.
That was a happy hour.
Yeah. I'm like, why did you sell it in the six pack? Like, it makes no sense to me that you sold it in fives when it's like happy hour. It should be a six pack.
It should have been. That would have been awesome.
But, you know, he goes, because I didn't have you, Pete. And I'm like, see, I'm valuable. People don't understand just how valuable the Pete is.
Well, Pete, when you're reading all those books, how do you make sure that you've got time to read all those books and do your bookmaking?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. First of all, I have an Audible subscription, so I don't have to actually read. They get read to me. And then I use SimplifyChurch.com because, let's face it, anyone who knows Pete knows two very important things. I like to make money, and I don't like to actually work. So when you have those two things mixed in you, then you want to find someone else who's going to do the work for you. Guess what? That's SimplifyChurch.com. They do the work for you.
Well, that's a better logo than what we had before, which I think was They Don't Suck. That's great. I like that.
Why
logo.
Doesn't Josh just go, you know, guys, I got bought out. You guys are making the new owners nervous with our app.
It's because they never listen.
That's literally what it is.
Had they listened in the very beginning. But you know what? Honestly, I think we might have some of the best ads in podcasting just because they're stupid every time. Consistency is a lot for marketing.
People would sing to us the MoGive jingle.
Oh my gosh.
At conferences. Yeah.
Emoji. We'd be at conferences and we'd hear people in the audience going, emoji. We made up a jingle for them and we'd sing it. That was funny stuff. All right. Well, hey, this is Pete, with the most energy you can muster.
And remember, if you want to reach the ones that nobody's reaching, you need to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's doing.
And that's a wrap, everybody.